From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 21st, 2020. Need a new car or truck? The Auto and Truck Show is happening all week at the Wisconsin Center. And the Farmers Winter Market is happening Saturday at the Mitchell Park Domes. The Rock Band America is at the Riverside Theater next Friday. And your Milwaukee Bucks host the 76ers Saturday night at the Forum. Here's a little something special for Rover. It's a cuss collar. How it works is very simple. Every time your dog barks, the collar yells a swear word. I think this could be fun, but even funnier if you have a talking parrot. And finally, an elderly woman was not giving a robber all the money in her convenience store till. When the crook pulled a gun, she grabbed some bananas and started to pelt him with the fruit. Well, this guy isn't meant for a life of crime. He ran from the store and the flying bananas and right into the arms of two cops that were stopping to grab a sandwich. If it wouldn't be for bad luck, this guy would have no luck at all. Around the big table today, we have Mark Amateus, Kyle Tedding, Isabel Wimero, Joel Driesing, and looking back at the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Jason. Kind of a disappointing week. Left a few nickels on the table. NASDAQ shed 1.6% this week after hitting a record high on Wednesday. NASDAQ lost 1.6% for the week, still up a stellar 6.9% for the year. We closed at the end of today, the NASDAQ at 9,577. The S&P 500 also hit a record high on Wednesday and then fell. For the week, down 1.3%, shedding 42 points to close at 3,338. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 406 points this week, still up 1.9% year-to-date. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 28,992. You know, Kyle, let's start with the virus. By the end of January, a lot of people thought that the risks would be contained. Appears late this week that maybe that's not the case. Maybe China's not getting back to work sooner. What's your take on that?
You know, I think it's incredibly interesting, Bob, that, you know, we've been dealing with this now for the better part of a month and a half, and yet, you know, really no new news on progress towards any kind of, you know, prevention mechanism or any kind of stoppage in the rate of spread. And so, you know, there's a lot of noise in all the data that comes out, and certainly I think that makes it difficult for kind of the average reader or the average investor to get a sense of what's really happening. But I think very clear that there's been an impact on investments. And then as you mentioned, I think, you know, especially as we look at China's first quarter GDP, there's going to be a pretty significant and measurable impact. And so what's been unique is that I think in the past we've been unwilling to really trust the data that comes out of China. I know, Bob, you've mentioned in seminars you've given before that rather than look at that GDP number, what you look at is what the factories are actually producing or how much electricity is being used. And we're starting to see some measures that there's been a significant drop, especially in some of the major provinces in China, of electricity usage. And so if you talk about what the end result of that is, it's absolutely a slowdown in China. It's absolutely, you know, a larger impact on the Chinese economy more broadly. And because of China's place now compared to where it was maybe in 2003 with kind of the last major disease outbreak there, you know, I think the impact is greater on the global economy now as well. And so we haven't completely seen the spillover in terms of economic impact, but I fully expect that there will be some. And I think, you know, as we start to see more reports on February data especially, we're going to start to see that show up in the numbers from industrials, from service sector, from, you know, a variety of different places where that really matters.
Kyle, as you know, Goldman Sachs the other day came out and estimated that we'd have to carve about 0.5% off of GDP growth because of the coronavirus. And then this week, Apple announced they're not going to hit their revenue numbers. Their stock got hit pretty good. Procter & Gamble came out and said that sales have been extremely disappointing in China. So their stock took a hit. So, you know, it looks like it's spreading here. Go back to the Goldman Sachs estimate, about 0.5% decline in GDP. GDP was only supposed to be 1.7-ish% this year, so carve a half percent off that. Still a positive number, but nowhere near what it had been, the last couple of years. Kyle, let me switch, talk about earnings. I'm a huge fan of earnings and interest rates driving stock prices. Good news was, a week ago Thursday, the 30-year Treasury auction came in with a yield that was a record low, 2.06%. Tells me that bonds aren't going to be a lot of competition for stocks, that it will ultimately provide underlying support for the U.S. stock market. But a record low yield at 2.06 speaks volumes as to what big money thinks, that inflation's not an issue, they don't expect robust growth, they don't expect challenge on the rates. You know, you're making a pretty bold bet when you take a position for 30 years on a bond, hoping that interest rates don't go up on you. But the bad side is on the earnings front. You know, as you're well aware, we started the year with the estimates at 9.7%. And every week in January, it seemed that they carved a tenth of a percent off of that. Then late in January, after oil and gas plunged, the earnings estimates went down quite a bit to 8%. So it's disappointing again to see that, FactSet keeps lowering that number, and in a fairly brief period of time, a week, earnings now are forecast to be at 7.7%. So let me state the obvious. This here is the third week in February, and in that short period of time since the beginning of the year, earnings estimates have come down 20%.
Yeah, I think, and that's the critical point, Bob, as we look at valuations that were expensive to start the year and, stock prices that, while they haven't gone up drastically, are certainly higher than where we started the year. Now, the only thing that's happened then is that stocks have become a little more expensive than they were. And so, we've flirted with a forward PE of 20 on the S&P 500 at times. We've flirted with, some valuation levels where you'd start to go, whoa, okay, maybe we need to keep things in a bit more perspective. And I think, that the saving grace, as you mentioned, is that 30-year Treasury got as low as it did. There just isn't competition out there right now for stocks, and that's not just here in the U.S. There's not really anywhere around the world where you can go and get, a great rate on safe money or somewhat safe money. You've got to take a little bit of risk. You got to buy those stocks, because ultimately most investors are investing because they need returns. They need some kind of earnings on their money to get better than 2.06, because ultimately 2.06 isn't going to get you the withdrawal you need when you're ready to retire. And so, I think the saving grace certainly is the rates, but, I think the challenge, as you say, is on the earnings front. And the further challenge may be that when the analysts put together those earnings forecasts, they can only rely on the information they know to be true. They can only rely on what they already know. And to the extent that this coronavirus or COVID-19 continues to be an issue, to the extent that the FAA continues to delay a recertification of the Boeing MAX, for example, those are issues that make their way into earnings projections, not just on Boeing or not just on the travel companies that might be impacted by the virus, but that make their way into all the other businesses that feed into them. And so, I think there's some potential downside right now. There's some potential risk that should be, a great reason why stocks sold off, as we saw later in the week. When you've got these questions, I think it's healthy to see stocks take a little bit of a dive.
Certainly the good news is earnings growth looks pretty strong still for next year. A little bit early to be peeking into next year, but by the springtime, big money will have written off this year, and they'll be peeking into the next couple of years to get a sense. And to that extent, assuming they're somewhat near accurate with their estimates, things look pretty good. Mark, let me bring you into the program. What's your take on current events?
Well, Bobby, talking about valuations, notice that the S&P 500 passed 19 times forward earnings. And that's the first time since May of 2002 that it's gotten that high. But, when you look back over the last 20 years, the actual peak was 24.4 times earnings back in March of 2000, before the dot-com bubble burst. So, valuations are stretched, and the coronavirus clearly is affecting earnings. But we're not at that point yet, I don't think, where, you know, we have to be overly concerned that, hey, that's the end of, you know, of the bull market. You know, in fact, you know, looking back, bull markets usually end with euphoria, you know, when the last money that felt that they were missing out has finally gone all in, and there's no more money to go in and drive the markets higher. That's typically where it ends. And I think also that, you know, some companies like Apple, who are clearly affected and will continue to be affected by what's happening with the coronavirus, you know, they can make that up. The people who are pulling in their horns, or the supply chains that are disrupted so that they can't get the product out, those will eventually resolve themselves. And, you know, some of that, I think, will get pulled ahead into future quarters and maybe make earnings look a little better than they would have otherwise.
Isabel, what do you think about current events?
You know, we've already touched on the virus, and I'm getting a lot of comments here and there from clients who are just mentioning that we're getting into an election year. And in a lot of those conversations that I'm having with them, I've been finding myself thinking back to one of my favorite sailing quotes, which is, you can't change the winds, but you can adjust your sails. And when I say that, I don't mean to sound like I think that investors should be reactive. It's actually the exact opposite. I think it's a really good reminder that if you haven't looked at your allocation, now would be a good time to do so. We've been at a really long up run. And if you're looking at your allocation and your sales are set, you should be good to stay the course long term, even with all of these uncertainties that's going to be going on around us.
You know, when you think of the U.S. economy mostly being driven by consumer spending, I mean, the vast majority of people that spend their money do so without regard to who's in the White House. Half the country can't even identify their congressperson. So I think it's important for most investors to really disengage from the political process when it comes to the stock market. I think it's important to disengage from the economy when you look at the stock market because they're two very different things. I mean, the vast majority of us with consumer spending do fairly routine, boring things with our money. We buy gas to put in the car to get to work. You buy a car to get to work. You heat your house. You pay the taxes on your house. You have to paint your house. You have to roof your house. Consumer non-durables, most of us don't switch brands a lot. We're pretty locked into what types of soaps we use, what other types of household products we use. That's our economy, and I'm overly simplifying it, of course. But most people don't spend money based on, you know, who's in office. It is important to point out that you potentially can game the system. What's best for the stock market is when one party controls the White House and another party controls Congress. Sad fact of life that what's best for stocks is when they won't get anything accomplished. Says a lot about the pathetic state of politicians here in the country. But that's statistically what's best for stocks, is you want not one party in control, but you want it mixed. And I mean, it certainly matters who's in the White House. It matters who's in Congress. It matters how they run the country. But it doesn't matter as much as most people think it does, you know, relative to stock prices, because as you are fully aware, it's about earnings. If earnings go up, stocks go up, regardless of who's in Washington. If interest rates go up, tends to be a drag on stocks. Rates go down, it tends to help stocks. And I think also, Isabel, it's important for clients not to think that it's somehow possible to time the market. You can't. And about everybody that comes into my office all day long wants to know how the market's going to do this year. And, you know, the most honest reaction would be just to shrug my shoulders and go, I don't know, because things will come up this year that we're not smart enough to anticipate, and that'll change things. So back to your point, you know, set your sails properly relative to the wind. Don't panic if you get a gust. Don't panic if you get hit by a rogue wave. And just stay the course, I think, is the appropriate advice for most people.
Well, Bob, I think it's so interesting, too, as we look at this political conversation that, yeah, it matters, especially for the American voter, especially for U.S. investors a little bit. But the underlying companies that we're investing in are far more global in their focus. And so it's not simply about what's happening here in the U.S., but it's what's happening around the world. And so, you know, what I care more about is what demographic opportunities exist in the developing world right now. What I care more about is whether or not, you know, European consumers continue to get good, have good employment, because they're the ones that ultimately are purchasing products, not just U.S. consumers. And so, you know, I think it's maybe a bit naive to think that, you know, the entirety of the S&P or the entirety of U.S. stocks is driven by U.S. consumers. The reality is, you know, 40 to 45% of revenue for S&P companies comes from outside the U.S. And so you got to factor in a lot more than just what's going on in the U.S. election cycle.
That's a really good point. Joel, let's bring you into the show. This morning, this indicator came out about service sector. Market took a pretty good hit after that came out.
Right, yeah. So it was a PMI as a flash report on based on interviews with purchase managers at various companies, and it was the first time that it showed a slip in a while, and most of the slip was actually from the service sector, which we don't expect. We think we're just almost or have come out of a manufacturing recession, and we're not hearing as much about problems in the service sector. But again, back to the coronavirus, that service sector includes travel companies and tourism companies. And so, you know, they are probably very directly, immediately affected by this. So that's a quick kind of a preliminary report. We'll have a better idea when we get the Institute for Supply Management numbers later in the month. And they separate those out between manufacturing and service.
Joel, the Conference Board came out with their index of leading economic indicators. That one looked pretty good.
It did, yeah. So they look at 10 different economic indicators, and they track them month to month, and they've been doing it for years. And they said, in particular, very low jobless claims, among the lowest that we've had in 50 years, and high building permit. Basically, building permits are you know, requests from builders to make more houses, and especially for single-family houses, we've had 9 months in a row of increases for that. So that's a good sign, again, for consumers. And then the other things that they said that looked very good were consumer confidence and stock prices. So those four out of the 10 factors alone made the indicators go up higher than analysts were even expecting. And based on that, the Conference Board says that they think that the GDP is growing at about a 2% annual pace right now. And they see that through the middle of the year, at least.
Well, Joel, juxtapose that to the PMI survey that you talked about earlier, and that services sector question, it's really one question that drives the ultimate number. It's not this broad-ranging host of factors. And so, you've got a somewhat preliminary report on one sector of the economy based on a single question that measures how does this look versus, I think, what really matters in some of the pieces of the leading economic indicators, what's the employment picture look like and how do the consumers feel right now? And the consumers are largely confident. The employment picture looks great. And so I think that, as far as our economy is concerned, is far more important long term. Yeah, short term, maybe some concerns about COVID-19, some concerns about other issues that are out there. But, you know, I think, you know, that certainly the employment picture and especially consumer sentiment or consumer confidence are more important.
Good point, Kyle. And the leading indicators is based more on data rather than interviews, which is all the PMI is based on.
Kyle, last week on the podcast, we started a conversation during the program about investing in the U.S. versus overseas. You gave me a copy of a research report that went into that earlier today. But let me set the stage. Folks, if you look at the last 10 years, U.S. stocks have tripled off the lows 10 years ago. Japanese stocks, give or take, have doubled. European stocks are up 64%. Chinese stocks haven't made any money, give or take, in 10 years, nor have stocks in the rest of Asia. So we look at the marketplace now, and stocks, give or take, are heading towards 19 times earnings here in America. You can buy stocks all day long in Europe and Asia for 13 times earnings. The problem is that they don't have much in the way of earnings, so they're cheaper reason. But the research report that you gave me, I thought was interesting because it stripped out the tech stocks here in the U.S. and they did kind of a deeper dive on U.S. stocks, and except for healthcare, every other sector of the U.S. economy is trading for higher multiples than what you see in Europe and Asia. So that's the setup. I think over the next 10 years, just work backwards on what I said. I think we'll probably make more money in Asia. We'll make pretty good money in Europe and maybe not as much here in the United States.
You know, I think that's absolutely the punchline there, but I think the interesting part is trying to dissect, or part of the interesting part at least, is trying to dissect what some of those differences in valuations are. And you kind of alluded to it, but you know, you could say it's largely the technology stocks that have had such a great run that led to that overvaluation here, and still fair valuations overseas that are less reliant on tech stocks. I think, you know, as the data shows, as the research report kind of points out, you know, you look at, okay, how do we attribute the valuation stretch here versus the rest of the world? Only about a third of it is attributable to the five biggest tech stocks, which are 18% of the U.S. stock market. The rest of that, though, is because everything is overvalued. U.S. consumers, U.S. investors have been more willing to bid up U.S. stocks. I think there's been less uncertainty about our economy, and the best way to capture our economy is to capture U.S. companies. And then, you know, the flip side of that, as you say, is, but that probably means that the next 10 maybe look a little bit different than the last 10. And the one challenge there is that I think we're still in an environment where U.S. stocks are going to exhibit less volatility. And so if you're a stock investor and you're looking for what's the best opportunity, it's all about time horizon. And so, you know, I think if you can play the long game, if you can wait out some of the challenges that exist, some of the, you know, continued issues that will be a part of the Brexit that's now taken place, some issues from this COVID-19, and really I think some of the holdover from what's been a slower global economy broadly that impacts a lot of the European Union, you know, you're set up for a pretty nice payday likely. At least relative to U.S. stocks. But I think, again, the challenge is what's your time horizon and can you afford to wait out, you know, getting to that payoff? And that's where, you know, balance comes in. That's where the conversations we have every day with our clients about let's make sure you're appropriately allocated for what you need from your portfolio come in. And so, yeah, it's great to say we can allocate a little bit more there, but it absolutely comes down to the individual investor.
And as you know, valuations don't do anything for market timing. So we can tell you what's expensive, what's not expensive, but it doesn't segue into, okay, now's the time to do it. So back to your point of longer term, couldn't agree more. Short term, you know, we do have the issue of weakening growth in Asia. We do have the issue with the stronger dollar as a significant headwind. But longer term, I think that's where the money's going to shift to. But it might take us a while to get there. Folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Tell everybody you know about the show. The audience continues to grow. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.